Love, Lust, and Laughter with Dr. Diana Wiley and Billy Sage, Fridays at 6 p.m. on the Progressive Radio Network.
Cosa leggerai? Con che libro affascini il tuo cuore? E se ti perderai nel labirinto di un amaro attore?
Ma i tuoi piedi, ma i tuoi piedi,
this is Dr. Diana Wiley, the host of Love, Lust, and Laughter. And the theme music is Happy Feet. And this program won't have as many happy sort of feet or thoughts, but it's still going to be an excellent program. And my guest co-host this week again is Brian Brewer. Brian,
hello,
are you there?
Yes, I am. Hello, Dr. Diana.
Good. Hello,
Brian. Yes, you're
Brian.
Right. We've got a serious topic for today, just like we did last week. This is part two, and our guest once again is Dr. Peter Pasek, a physician who has been performing plastic surgery in Manchester, New Hampshire for over 30 years. Dr. Pasek is a recognized pioneer in helping patients overcome severe vaginismus. That's the topic today. There's a lot of silence that surrounds this condition, and our intention is to use this program to break down that wall of silence and to shed some light on this very important condition that affects a lot of women. So before Dr. Wiley introduces Dr. Pasek, you're going to say a few words about vaginismus, correct?
Yes. Dr. Pasek has a wonderful brochure, Understanding Vaginismus, and he's written a book called When Sex Seems Impossible. So the questions that he opens the brochure with, I think, are crucial. Do you have fear and pain? Have they stopped you from having intercourse? Are you unable to use tampons or feel like they won't fit? Do you physically withdraw or panic during gynecological exams? And there's also a quote from one of his patients. It's the worst feeling ever to want to make love, but your body won't let you. And I had one of my patients who will actually have Dr. Pasek's procedure. We've changed her name to protect her identity and confidentiality. So Eleanor wrote to me after the last show. She listened to it a week ago live, and she said, it's really encouraging for me to hear such positive feedback. She was referring to the two callers we had last week. We may hear from them again, Kim and Tabia. She says that they were obviously beyond thrilled with their experience with you, Dr. Pasek, and with the treatment and its success. An astonishing 1-7% of women worldwide suffer from vaginismus, and this is a condition marked by involuntary spasms of the vaginal muscles. It seems to be brought on by a real, genuine fear of vaginal penetration. So intercourse is not just painful, but virtually impossible. Last year, Dr. Pasek received an FDA approval to continue his study using intravaginal injections of Botox. And this is together with progressive dilation under anesthesia to treat vaginismus. So, Dr. Pasek, it's a pleasure to have you on this program for a second time. Welcome.
Thank you, Diana, and it is a pleasure to return again.
Thank you. So would you explain a little more about vaginismus, sort of under the heading of let's do an overview?
Certainly. There really are, and you explained it quite well, in terms of women having a tremendous fear and anxiety of having any form of penetration. And you have really a stratification. You can have less severe forms of vaginismus where they are able to tolerate some form of penetration, all the way to the most severe forms of vaginismus where they give a history of not being able to tolerate any form of penetration. And this dates back all the way to attempted use for tampons, when very often a young woman will first recognize that perhaps something is wrong.
And so that may be soon after she starts menstruating.
Yes, exactly. And they just don't understand it. All their friends are using tampons, and they can't use tampons.
Mm-hmm.
Later, they have more problems when they become a little bit more mature and they start wanting to get sexually involved.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And even the light foreplay becomes frightening for them because they are already aware of their fears.
Mm-hmm.
Surrounding the idea of having penile penetration and actually any form of penetration, be it a finger or a penis.
Yes. So maybe we should back up a little bit and talk about the... Yeah, Brian.
Well, yeah, I'm... Again, welcome, Dr. Pasek. It's wonderful to have you back. I think I want to mention to listeners that we did part one of this two-part program last week, and it's archived on the Progressive Radio Network website. But so we're going to do a bit of a review here. Can you tell us a little bit about the histories of vaginismus patients? I understand that there's considerable similarity between them.
There is. The histories really read almost all the same. It dates back to when they first knew something might not be right. It continues into their dating period where they just didn't want to get too sexually involved. I think most importantly, many of my women, many of my patients discover the problem of vaginismus on their honeymoon. This is absolutely devastating for them. And I treat patients from so many different cultures. I have patients actually coming in from around the world, and we really see a cross-section of cultures. And in cultures where it is typical for man and woman to be separated until their marriage, they very often, such as some of my patients from England of the Muslim faith, they very often don't put too much on that. And they say, okay, fine, you know, maybe she was nervous and we'll try again another time. Because oftentimes these patients really don't know very well their spouse-to-be. But then what happens is the history is so typical for these patients in that days become weeks and weeks become months, and they begin looking for an answer, and they begin checking with their healthcare professionals to look for an answer and often don't get one. And so it just continues to get worse and worse in terms of their relationship. And then that's when they begin becoming silent about it, because they don't want to talk about raising families because they can't consummate their marriages. And this is where there's so much similarity between patients from around the world.
Yes. I'm actually a little bit later today. I'm seeing a couple from India, and they've been married a couple of years, and she has this condition. And there's a lot of pressure on their respective families.
Yes.
To have children.
Yes.
And so that adds to the tension in the marriage tremendously. You mentioned the Muslim faith, and of course there are other faiths. Strict religious beliefs will often contribute to the idea that the couple needs to be, they both need to be virgins when they marry. So they may have unrealistic expectations, but also high expectations on the honeymoon. And then when they can't have intercourse, like most couples on a honeymoon, they're just so disappointed. So it's not only the strict religious upbringing that often contributes, but I've had a number of patients who've suffered from sexual molestation and trauma. And it's almost like it's the vagina's way of saying no to a previous emotional trauma. I won't let anything else in there.
Right.
The physiological response to the emotional.
Yes.
From previously.
Yes, I think we really are dealing with two different things. We're dealing with a psychologic concern manifesting itself in a physiologic response. So I see this patient after patient that we have two things going on. We have the high anxiety, the high levels of anxiety, psychologically about penetration, manifesting themselves with considerable vaginal spasm, usually of the entry muscle, and that's the physiologic response. It's almost like a protective reflex. They're just protecting themselves against that. And it can certainly factor into the etiology that you're describing.
Yes. So my client, Eleanor, as I'm calling her, well, actually, she and her husband are already back. I think they're flying today in New Hampshire. So she will have the procedure on Monday, the 19th. And I think it'd be really useful for our listening audience to give kind of a description of the actual procedure. Because I know you've told me on the phone that you you just say, I'm going to walk you through it, because your patients want that. They have so much anxiety anyway, and they kind of want to know what's going to happen.
Yes, and I think it helps a lot. And I do this very frequently when I'm on the phone with my patients, or if they're in consultation with me. I walk them through the procedure, because then there's a certain familiarity with it. And when I see them, sometimes I have not had a chance to examine them before because they come in from out of town, in which case I will have thoroughly reviewed the comprehensive questionnaire that they fill out, and then I'll have a complimentary phone conversation with them just to be able to answer questions and also oftentimes to walk them through the procedure. I also ask them to read my book, because in the book we walk the patient through the procedure. The first thing that we do is we really want to make the patient comfortable. They come into the office on the day of the procedure, and they very often are a bundle of nerves. The anxiety is getting the best of them. Some of my patients are crying in the office because they are so emotionally distraught. And so the very first thing we need to do is to comfort them and to talk to them a little bit and to allow them to get past this high level of anxiety. One of the things we do is early on we take them downstairs to the recovery room, where they change into a gown and they meet the anesthesiologist. This is absolutely critical for the patient, because sometimes when the patients come in with very high anxiety, it will actually give them some sedation nice and early so that they can start relaxing in the recovery room. And we try to facilitate this entire thing, because most of the patients tell me they just want to get it over and done with. They don't want to linger too far. They've had all their explanations. Let's get it done. And so we'll take them. It doesn't take very long before we'll slip them into our surgery center, where the anesthesiologist is with them all the time. And then, depending on how anxious they are, will also depend on how much sedation they receive. And I'll just simply do an external examination, and then I'll do what's called a Q-tip test, where I'll touch them with a cotton-tipped applicator, just to determine if there's any associated vulvodynia. Vulvodynia is pain either in the vulva or in the vestibule, just outside the vagina.
And sometimes there is some vulvodynia present.
There can be associated vulvodynia, yes.
Mm-hmm. But many of these women with vaginismus have been misdiagnosed.
That's correct also. And actually, even patients will give incorrect responses. When I test them, I always try to establish whether they're actually having pain in the vulva or whether they're having anxiety from being touched in that area. And sometimes that's a real gray zone, in that the patient herself may not be able to distinguish between the two.
Oh, that's interesting.
And I actually find that although about half of my patients test positive for vulvodynia,
mm-hmm.
find that it's actually very rare to have associated vulvodynia. Once they're having intercourse, none of them seem to complain any longer of pain in the vulva. I do have one patient that had true associated vulvodynia and vaginismus, and she was treated with the program that we have of the Botox. And then after about 4 months, she started having some problems again with the vulvodynia, though the vaginismus continued to stay under control.
So Dr. Pasek?
There's so many variations on the theme.
Yes.
For us, a learning process also in terms of understanding this condition a little bit better.
We have Tabea once again on the line. Tabea is a former patient of yours, and I think it's very powerful to give first-hand reports about the process. Tabea, are you there?
I am. Hi, how are you?
Hi, good. Thank you for calling back. I mean, you have quite a story with Dr. Pasek, and these kinds of stories can be so reassuring to other women with this condition. So would you tell us about what you actually experienced during the procedure or just before the procedure, because you don't know during because you were under anesthesia, but also post?
Well, you know, Dr. Pasek does an excellent job of describing what exactly would happen. But I was one of those patients who came in, and immediately when I walked through the doors, tears were streaming. I have never been so anxious, so overwhelmingly nervous in my life.
Mm-hmm.
And I was in the waiting room. He greeted me. The anesthesiologist greeted me. They came in. They were very warm and kind. I was one. I did need a bit of sedation before I went in. When I went in, I remember him talking to me. I remember the Q-tip test, and I even remember saying, yes, it hurt, and I said, no, wait a minute. It's just anxiety. It doesn't hurt.
When you were able to distinguish. Mm-hmm.
Yes, I was.
Yeah.
His staff was excellent. I mean, I love shoes, so they were talking to me about shoes, trying to calm me down. But it was just an awesome process of, you know, knowing what women go through, knowing how to divert the situation in terms of having them relax, really having a handle on, because I remember the anesthesiologist trying to figure out, you know, where I was, so how much did I need in terms of, I guess, the amount of anesthetic to relax me. So it was just a reassuring process all the way through. I remember my boyfriend said that, you know, when Dr. Pasek touched me or when he touched me, I was kind of jumping off the table, even under anesthetic. But when I woke up, didn't remember a thing, and the largest dilator was inserted, and it was just a moving experience for me.
Because you didn't have any pain. And here you've got this large dilator
mm-hmm.
inside of your vagina, and you didn't have any pain. That must have just been incredible for you.
It was. And then less than 15 minutes later, I took it out and reinserted. And, yes.
Just, wow.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. And was your boyfriend there for that part of it?
He saw the whole thing. And, the mate goes through a whole different set of issues, and it was really, I mean, we have an awesome relationship, but that made us even more closer because he really saw firsthand. You know, you can only explain so much to someone. He saw firsthand what I was going through, and I was under anesthetic. So if I'm under anesthetic, you know, when you're conscious, that's a whole nother level. So, yeah.
Dr. Pasek, I'm sure that before we let Tabea go, you'll want to say something to her about all of this.
Well, it was just a joy taking care of Tabea. She was just really nervous and crying, and my heart goes out to all of these patients because there's such a struggle. There's just such an enormous struggle, feeling like freaks, not getting the diagnosis, going on for years without a diagnosis, having these high levels of anxiety to contend with, you know, having to explain it to your partner. I mean, it's just a miserable condition. And I have to say, it is just a joy taking care of every one of my patients and staying in touch with them afterwards, and seeing how they're doing and helping them with their dilation schedule and modifying it as needed. I just wanted to ask you, tell me a little bit, or perhaps the audience, in terms of how you were feeling, how you were processing the idea that you were going to be using dilators after the procedure.
Oh, it was terrifying. I didn't even think, honestly, I thought I would be, Dr. Pasek shared with us, he had a 98% success rate, and I just knew I was going to be that one that it didn't work, and I wasn't going to be able to do it. There were three women that had the procedure that day. I was number two in line, and so I'm kind of trying to look through the curtain and listen to see if everything went right with the other woman, but it was a terrifying experience. I didn't think I could do it, but from, like, literally 15 minutes after I was practicing and had so much support, it was a struggle at first because, again, the nerves are there, but they were just so comforting. And even as far as, you know, calling my mom to let her know everything was okay, it was just all around. When we left, there were hugs and kisses because for everybody, because it was just such a wonderful experience. Not once did I feel, oh, maybe I shouldn't do this, this isn't the right decision, but I felt empowered. I you know, it was a, you know, like riding a bike, and then I got it, and it's, I haven't looked back since. I totally remember what it felt like before, but I feel like, you know, I can, it's empowered. I can't even, I just words can't express how grateful I am, and I'm doing it, and I'm cured.
Well, Tabea, you express it very well, and thank you for calling in again. And before we go to Kim, who's also called in again, Brian, I'm wondering if you would give the information in case about Dr. Pasek's book and the call-in number and so on.
Yes, Dr. Pasek has written a great book. It's called When Sex Seems Impossible, Stories of Vaginismus and How You Can Achieve Intimacy. And it's available in several ways. You can go to his website, www.plasticsurgerypa.com, and you can order it there, or it's available on Amazon.com, both in print form as well as in Kindle. And so if you are searching on the on Amazon or on the web for either the website or the book, Dr. Pasek's last name is spelled P-A-C-I-K. And so I'm glad we have Kim on the line, and I also want to encourage any other listeners to please call in. The call-in number is 1-888-874-4888. Thanks.
Yeah, thank you. We need to go to a break in a few minutes, but Kim, I want to get you in before the break and maybe even stay a little after the break. Welcome back, Kim. And
great. Thank you so much for having me. I appreciate it.
Well, and you were so sweet to, you actually emailed me directly after the last show, and thank you for that.
You're welcome. You're welcome. I just wanted to give you and Dr. Pasek and the audience an update. We're actually on our first out-of-state vacation since the procedure,
really?
And we're so excited about it. Like, for everybody out there who, you know, who's gone through this, and for me, it's like vacations going, you know, going away was just kind of normal before, but it's just, it's so amazing now. It's just, it's so exciting to go on vacation together.
Well, because now you can really have hot sex, complete hot sex, right?
In the hotel room. And it's just, it's so exciting. It's so much different than any other vacation I've ever had. So
now you, I'm hoping you'll share with us what your practice with the dilators was like.
Certainly will. Like Tavia, you know, I just listened. She mentioned that everybody feels the same sense of, like, it's not going to work. Like, every single patient feels that way. I thought that I'd be the only person it wouldn't work for automatically. But, you know, I started with the dilators, like, almost immediately after I woke up. And I was initially scared, but it just, it works so well with, you know, with the lidocaine kind of ointment.
Mm-hmm.
And then it just kept working so well for me. And Tim was right there beside me. And initially, like, you know, you feel a little awkward because you're going through it, but it goes right away.
Mm-hmm.
And then
yes.
you practice with all the dilators. And, you know, for somebody who's never been able to insert a Q-tip to being able to insert, like, the largest blue dilator, like, it really, really, really does happen with the procedure. Like, I have no pain whatsoever with dilating.
Isn't that great?
It's amazing.
And how did you and your husband transition then to intercourse?
Literally within a week. Like, basically, you know, I followed the schedule. You know, I work really, really hard, so I do 2 hours a night. You know, 2 hours of the pink and the blue dilator. And then, you know, within a week, like, I just had the blue dilator and simply, like, you just had it for a couple of hours and took it out, and then we just had intercourse, and it worked perfectly the first time, which is seriously a miracle. Like, we tried so many times before, and it didn't work at all. So.
Didn't work, and so your husband must be thrilled.
He is. He's especially happy on the case.
That's great. And no doubt, after all these dilators, the real thing, i.e. his penis in your vagina, must have felt just fabulous.
It does. And the thing is, like, you know, so many women are terrified they won't be able to do it, but
mm-hmm.
like with the blue dilator, like, you really, really, really can't do it. Like, you know, for everybody listening, like, I couldn't even insert a Q-tip, I can't say, with enough times
mm-hmm.
without, like, excruciating pain. And
mm-hmm.
then I had, like, the blue dilator is, like, larger than, you know, a typical man's penis, but it's just it's just fabulous. It's amazing.
Kim, you're giving so much hope and inspiration to so many women, and I have always said that personal testimonials are the most powerful, and you must feel compelled to share something so very personal because you feel the same way. You want other women to know about this so they don't have to suffer, often in silence, for years.
Exactly. And it goes on for years, and you really, you know, for so many women listening, like, you really don't know where to go or where to get the treatment. So finding Dr. Pasek and the treatment is just, it's like a miracle.
Well, thank you again. Dr. Pasek, you may want to say something to Kim before she signs off and we go to our break.
Oh, it's always wonderful hearing from Kim. Kim and I email each other just about every day. I'm in the process of developing a new website devoted entirely to vaginismus, and we're going to have a forum on that, and Kim has agreed to be the moderator for that.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to it.
Wow, good.
Kim and I have a great working relationship now, and we just love emailing each other every day and catching up. And I know that Kim is in Maryland now on a very important vacation here.
Exactly.
So it's always a joy, Kim, to hear from you.
Thank you so much. I appreciate it.
And thank you again, Kim. And so let's go to our break, and when we come back, Dr. Pasek and I are going to go into a little bit more about post-procedure follow-up, which does include sex therapy. And I'll be sharing there about what goes on, so stay tuned, please.
Cosa leggerai?
Welcome back, everybody. This is Brian Brewer, the co-host for today's session of Love, Lust, and Laughter with Dr. Diana Wiley and Dr. Peter Pasek. And before we continue with the show, I wanted to mention that Love, Lust, and Laughter is going to transition to a new time. Starting next week on September 20th, the show will air on Tuesdays at 2 p.m. Eastern Time. So
no, 5 p.m.
I'm sorry, 5 p.m. Eastern Time.
2 p.m. Pacific Time, which is where we are. But Progressive Radio Network, I think, is very generous. I mean, they clearly wanted me in maybe a better time slot. And Tuesdays at 5 and on the East Coast is a good time.
Sounds good.
Yeah, so thank you, Brian. We actually have another patient of Dr. Pasek's. I mean, clearly Dr. Pasek has a loyal and enthusiastic following. So we were going to talk about post-procedure follow-up, but maybe firsthand we can hear it from Patty. And Patty is new to these airwaves, but not new to Dr. Pasek, but new to me. So welcome to the program, mm-hmm. Patty. Thank you for calling.
Thank you very much.
So what is your story?
Well, I'm kind of at the other end of the spectrum because I will be 60 next month.
Mm-hmm.
But I never had painless sex in my life, although we have three children.
Mm-hmm.
We managed to work through the pain, but my youngest one is 30. And basically for the last 30 years, we really didn't have much sex. We've been married 38 years. And I was Googling painful sex last fall, came across Dr. Pasek's site, and gave him a call, and I had the procedure done in January, and it's a new life for us.
A new life.
Yeah,
so you have another happy husband.
Very much so, very much so, yeah.
So, Dr. Pasek, can you explain how this might happen for some women? I mean, it sounds like Patty always struggled with intercourse, but managed to do the three pregnancies. And then she developed, more vaginismus as time went on.
Hi,
is that
Patty.
How it is?
Thanks for calling in, Patty.
Sure.
Patty, I have three patients that have had vaginismus for 37 to 38 years, and Patty being one of them.
Mm-hmm.
There are many women who have the ability to have penetration, but they're still not comfortable. In actual fact, when I was going over Patty's questionnaires, I wasn't quite sure if we were dealing with primary or secondary vaginismus. In primary vaginismus, they've never been comfortable. In secondary vaginismus, they're comfortable early on and something happens, such as childbirth or a yeast infection or something unknown, where all of a sudden they start having pain. Or some patients have pain with menopause or perimenopause when they have some drying.
Yeah.
But as I spoke to Patty more and more, it became obvious that she was just never comfortable with penetration, never comfortable with intercourse, and actually suffered from primary vaginismus for a long period of time, and then pretty much basically shut down where she really couldn't have any form of penetration.
And Patty, that was after your last child was born.
Correct, right.
So you probably felt on some level that, I've produced three children. And
well,
then your body took over and said no because of the pain.
Right. It was just so painful that, you know, it wasn't pleasant for either of us. And eventually, you know, my husband didn't want to hurt me, so life just went on, and we just, you know, basically lived like brother and sister, I guess you'd say. But this is just, this procedure worked so well, and we feel like we feel like we're newlyweds now. Really.
Newlyweds. What a beautiful story, Patty.
Yeah.
And at almost 60, to feel like you're newlyweds. And as a sex therapist who's also a gerontologist and has specialized in aging and sexuality for a number of years, I know both, well, clinically and personally, that to have a good sex life as a woman over 60 or 60 and over makes all the difference in terms of your general well-being and your health.
And just to feel like a woman, you know, like not like a freak, you know, like,
yeah,
I always did feel that way. I always felt like, what is wrong with me? There's something wrong with
me.
I never would share it with my friends. You know, it's not something that you talk about, but since I've had it done, I felt very, very it's very easy to share with my friends. I'm a nurse, and my coworkers were quite impressed with it. And I've actually talked to a couple of people who have friends who have that same problem. So just getting the word out, I think, is important.
And speaking of friends, if any of you in the PRN audience know of a woman suffering from vaginismus, please have her listen to this show and the one last week, and, of course, these shows the one today will be archived by at least Monday. But these shows are archived, and you can download them, and that would be very good. Patty, thank you for sharing your story. You sound like a wonderful woman, and I'm so glad your story has such a happy ending.
Oh, I am too, and I was just like the other girls. I thought this won't work at all for me, and I thought I was too old, but you're never too old.
Indeed, you're never too old. Never too old. So thank you again, and the show is, of course, we're losing time here.
Sure.
Okay,
well, thanks for having me.
Thank you.
Hello, Dr. Kasich.
Okay, thank you, Patty.
So, I'd like to talk a little bit about the sex counseling in post-procedure, and I'd really also like to talk about the male partners. I wonder, Brian, let's get the male point of view here.
Well, okay.
I mean, I know
I haven't had a first-hand
experience with this, but you've talked to me about these.
Well, I can just imagine that as a male partner, that this could be just a really difficult situation to deal with in a marriage or a relationship. And is that what you have found, Dr. Pasek, in your experience?
Yeah, I have. I mean, it's just heart-wrenching because so many relationships break up simply because the woman just is not able to have intercourse and marriages break up. It's a tremendous pressure on a relationship, and it takes a special man to still love his lady and say that, okay, it's just not that important. We have other ways that we can satisfy ourselves. And, it's just amazing. By and large, these men come in, and they're solicitous, and they are caring, and they're just there. I mean, they are really there. Sometimes I sense hostility. Sometimes I sense detachment. And some of these relationships are in trouble. And so we have patients like Tabea and Kim who really don't need a great deal of help afterwards, and the male partners don't need a great deal of help. But sometimes we have patients who have major problems, and I would like Diana to speak to that a little bit. We have patients who have low libido, continued fear and high anxiety about penile penetration, even though they're using the dilators. A lot of these women have depression. They have relationship issues. And some of the men need some help also, because I find about 20% of them have erectile dysfunction. So there still is, in some patients, a lot of work that needs to be done by a sex therapist afterwards, and I think that Diana could weigh in on that.
Yes, I think that some couples suffering with this condition, and it is a couple's problem. I mean, it's the woman's physical problem, but it is a couple's problem. So they just kind of give up talking about it, and they distance themselves from each other, and they kind of fold up their tent and say, oh, dear, we just fight about this, and some women fear that the man will go away and leave, so maybe if we don't talk about it, it's the denial thing. And then couples that I finally identify the problem, will say, okay, well, it's for this reason, but once the reason has been identified, they need so much more work on their intimacy, their emotional intimacy, and their physical intimacy as well. And of course, I'm often saying to couples who have performance anxiety, even couples without this problem, sex does not equal intercourse. There are lots of other things you can do. And there are a few couples who have vaginismus where they actually strengthen their relationship because they do lots of foreplay and lots of oral sex. And the woman can, in the best of circumstances, can be orgasmic, say, with a sex toy on her clitoris. and they actually have a very rich sex life, even with few. These are sort of the minority, without intercourse. But then imagine when they can have intercourse, how really amazing their sex life will be. And we need to do that kind of intimacy work. And then if a guy is having erectile dysfunction, we may have to do that. Maybe he can, you know, if he can only put the tip of his penis in, for example, he may not be able to sustain an erection, or he's worried about his partner's pain. So maybe a small dose of Viagra or Cialis can help with that. There are lots of kind of creative ways you can approach this. And that's just a bit of an overview from my point of view. Certainly, I'll add to this, the sensate focus is essential. Sensate focus, I send couples home with homework assignments like this, and sensate focus education was a term first described by Masters and Johnson. And the goal of this therapy is to promote physical closeness and positive touch. And in the beginning, I encouraged couples to touch in a sensual nature, in a way rather than a sexual way, and to give feedback to the other. And it's very hard for some people to understand that you are not responsible for someone else's satisfaction. So it's important to give your partner feedback. So sensei focus is just one of the things. There's more. Dr. Pasek, you may want to add a little more about from what you've heard and from other sex therapists and sex counselors. And
well, you've covered it very well. there is in a certain number of patients also continued anxiety regarding penile penetration. I have some patients who are able to achieve intercourse within a day or two.
Mm-hmm.
And many patients who are able to achieve intercourse in a week or two.
Uh-huh.
Have other patients in my daily emails back and forth after they leave who after 2 months they're still struggling and they're still terrified and they're dilating easily with the largest number 6 of 6 dilators, which they refer to as the blue dilator because it's colored blue.
Mm-hmm.
And so here they're using a dilator that's either the size or larger than their partner's erect penis.
Mm-hmm.
We tell our patients that an erect penis is more comfortable than the dilator.
Yeah.
Yeah, the dilator is stiff, and an erect penis is really a lot softer. And yet the patients continue to have these high levels of anxiety trying to make the transition to intercourse, but having difficulty succeeding. And that just takes a lot of hand-holding and sometimes can take a surprising amount of time. Have you had experience with that?
Absolutely. Many of these patients have had some significant sexual trauma in their background. And so for 11 years, I co-led 2 women's sexuality groups, and all of the women had been sexually abused and were having trouble with orgasms and just staying present and letting go. And many of those women, I'm thinking back to the days that I did this for 11 years, had trouble with penetration or, you know, full-blown vaginismus or vulvodynia. And So these are deep issues that have to be worked through. And I stress, with somebody who knows what he or she is doing. Most women with sexual trauma in their background prefer to work with a female therapist. These are very deep, complicated issues. And so somebody qualified is essential. And a group. I don't think they have as many female sexuality groups as they used to, which is too bad, because that can be very powerful to work in a group. There's that universality aspect of it that, oh, geez, I'm not alone. Of course, this radio program could be supplying the very same thing for people out there listening. you know, who might have the condition. I'm not alone. There are many others. So it takes work. It takes work, perseverance, optimism. I think a very strong couple relationship. All of that.
And then it also, I think that I'm always so happy when my patients have a therapist that they can go back to, because there's only so much we can do in 2 or 3 days, and a lot of counseling will take weeks. And sometimes the counseling doesn't help too much before the procedure, because for the more severe patients, they just have trouble processing that information. But once they've had the treatment with the Botox and the progressive dilation, and they're dilating effectively post-procedure, then they're coming back with more power to overcome this. And one of the things that we talk about would also be positions of sexual comfort, because every woman is a little bit different, but there are positions where the pelvic floor can be more relaxed. And we work with our patients on that, and I know you do also.
Yes.
In terms of counseling of pretty much how to do it, because a lot of these women are so inexperienced. The men and the women both are sexually underdeveloped. And so I think the counseling also can speak to that.
Yes, and I know that many women who have sexual trauma in their backgrounds prefer the female superior position because they feel like they're in a little more control. But you mentioned the man, so some men say, you know, I don't really know what's wrong with me, and I feel guilty, and was I causing her to tense up? These are for men that are essentially virgins when they get married, and they don't know. They just don't have enough information. And so as you say in your book, the man may go from erection to dejection, and that is so true. So that in men it can cause stress, anger, depression, isolation, and lost libidos. The couple that you'll see on Monday, calling them Ed and Eleanor. I mean, Ed lost his libido before we discovered, or they agreed. I knew about you, Dr. Pasek. I've known about you for a couple of years. But before they agreed to go to New Hampshire, he just had lost his libido. And she still had her, so it was kind of, it was a problem, because she felt rejected, and she kept wanting to try, but see, it just wasn't working. He kind of gave up, and a lot of guys do that.
Right, and actually, when they give up, you know, it's a little bit like the female equivalent of what's the use. The female who has vaginismus, I have patients who won't even kiss because they say, what's the use? It's only going to lead to something that I can't do.
And like actually, arousal.
I had actually seen this with the male a part of the partnership, where the man said, well, what's the use? I mean, why? And so for this particular person, for Ed, where he lost his libido, it's hard to get it back sometimes.
Yes, and it is. I gave them some homework assignments that helped. But you stressed and I stressed, don't even try for penetration until after the procedure.
Yes. Exactly. And so what do you advise then? I would be interested to hear your thoughts about how you can move someone like Ed back into a functional erotic male.
Well, one of the things I had them do in session was to kind of count their blessings and say sweet nothings to each other, what they really appreciated and valued about each other, and how they counted on each other, and how they could be a team. And even a team, he's already with her, and I think in New Hampshire by now, and so they're a team. And to realize, and they're fortunate because they've only been married I think 6 months, and so they're fortunate. They're not living with it for like 7 years as some of your patients or longer. But I get them to look at all of the non-intercourse things they can do, both emotionally and physically, to talk with each other, to build up the relationship, and for them to really realize how fortunate they are to have each other. And they're going to be fully functional very soon. In other words, to be optimistic.
Right. It's very touching in the operating room when, of course, the patients are asleep when they have the Botox injections, and it's done with a very tiny needle, but there's so much anxiety that the only way we can really do it effectively is with the patient asleep, and that's why I have board-certified anesthesiologists in my surgery center who do that for me. But,
yes.
I mean, it is absolutely profound. It is touching for me every single time. I have had so many men cry in the operating room when they see their honey is still writhing with the pelvis, even though they're asleep, trying to avoid even my touch, and they're asleep, and they're still in spasm, and I have the male partner put on a glove, and he feels the spasm and realizes, often for the first time, that, gee, she wasn't doing this on purpose. He says, you know, it really isn't me. It is some condition that we is just involuntary and uncontrolled. And I have had many, many men cry with this sudden revelation that they are aware of what is really going on. And this is healing for them. It's healing in that they can move forwards then after this.
Don't you feel fortunate to do what you do, Dr. Pasek?
Well, I do love it every day, and I love working with these women. It's a wonderful group of patients to work with. I feel blessed. It's a wonderful chapter in my life being able to do this.
Yes, and you do it so well, and I'm so glad that you and I may have other opportunities to work together, certainly at our Quad S Scientific Society for Study of Sexuality Conference in Texas in November, when you're going to be presenting, and I'll be there for just a little bit of it, and you have two former patients there, too. You are doing a very valuable thing by spreading the word and letting people know that there really is a solution for this very difficult problem that so many women suffer. So thank you, Dr. Pasek. It's just been a pleasure. Maybe we'll redo this show at some point, and maybe a part three.
I'd like to remind everybody,
yes,
about Dr. Pasek's book.
Yeah.
Which it's called When Sex Seems Impossible, Stories of Vaginismus and How You Can Achieve Intimacy. Again, it's available on his website at plasticsurgerypa.com or at amazon.com. And also a reminder of that Love, Lust, and Laughter next week is moving to its new time slot, Tuesdays, 5 p.m. Eastern.
Thank you, Brian. I always love having Brian as a guest co-host, and with any luck, though, we'll have Billy Sage back for the next program, which will be, as Brian just said, so Tuesday, just a few days from now, the 20th, at 5 p.m. Thank you again, Dr. Pasek.
You're very welcome. It has been indeed a pleasure working with you for these two shows and with Brian, and I thank you for all the good questions that you asked.
Thank you, Peter Pasek. You're just great. And, well, we'll just sign off with lots of gratitude all around. And I think we've managed to do another show that's illuminating and educational. And I'm grateful for that. So we'll sign off and say, well, here's Dr. Diana Wiley saying, I'll see you Tuesday, in just a few days, new time slot. Bye-bye.